Nightly News, Monday, September 10th. Reported by John Chancellor.
Good evening. President Nixon today sent a second State of the Union message to the Congress, 15,000 words long and full of proposals. The president called for help in the fight against inflation. He wants action in the energy field following proposals he's already made. He asked that legislation be enacted for revenue sharing, one of the major elements in his domestic program. The president also warned against cuts in the defense budget. He is dead set against that. Mr. Nixon's day began with a breakfast attended by Carl Albert, the Speaker of the House, and Thomas O'Neill, leader of the House Democrats. Tom Brokaw reports from the White House.
A White House participant described the meeting between President Nixon and House leaders as friendly and positive. The breakfast orange juice was barely on the table before House Speaker Carl Albert and Majority Leader Thomas O'Neill were telling President Nixon they didn't think that he would get his Department of Energy and Natural Resources bill this session, but they did expect a trade bill to be passed. They also indicated that something could be worked out on the president's education and revenue-sharing proposals. A White House spokesman said the Democrats seemed to agree that the planned spending for health, education, and welfare was high, but then he added with a chuckle, "I don't know if they thought it was too high." As he did in his formal message, President Nixon stressed his concern about the level of congressional spending, warning that more vetoes are likely. And while he indicated a willingness to compromise, the president said he couldn't give much on three major areas: congressional spending, national defense, the powers of the presidency. He also said he would keep the heat on Congress. That's the president's phrase. But there was no more talk of the president calling Congress back into session if he is not satisfied at the time of adjournment. Tom Brokaw, NBC News at the White House.
The president's counterattack against the ravages of Watergate is clearly underway. Two press conferences in a couple of weeks, meetings with the Democratic and Republican leadership in the Congress, a White House ceremony last Saturday on the energy problem, a talk on the radio yesterday, and today, another State of the Union message. And we are told there will be many more indications of movement and decision on the president's part. In other news today, Henry Kissinger was back again before the Senate in the hearings to confirm him as Secretary of State. We'll be checking tonight on what happened to the prices of beef no longer controlled as of last midnight. And by satellite, we'll cover more bombings in London, bombings which seem to be getting bigger and more dangerous.
NBC Nightly News is brought to you by Insurance Company of North America, one of the companies of INA Corporation.
Welcome to Independence Hall. You're now standing in the most historic room in the United States. This is the room where the country was born.
In 1792, just 16 years after our country's birth, Insurance Company of North America was born in this very same place, conceived by the same kind of men who sat here in 1776. To them, an insurance policy wasn't just a piece of paper full of legal promises. It was a commitment to band together to meet the needs of a new country and its people, to give people someone to turn to, which was the kind of idea men had in mind when they founded this country. Since that time, that commitment, that attitude has remained constant at INA, a feeling that their business is not just selling insurance, but providing someone to turn to. Insurance Company of North America, where an insurance policy is more than just a piece of paper since 1792.
The Secretary of the Navy, John Warner, said today that all the Poseidon missiles in the American nuclear submarine fleet are going to have to be fixed. Warner said more than half of the missiles showed some kind of defect in tests last spring. He said the missiles will be modified over a three-year period. But, he said, Poseidon is reliable enough to ensure that American defense interests are not threatened. The Pentagon today said that the secret bombing of Cambodia, which went on for 14 months in 1969 and 1970, was very carefully coordinated by the White House. Each mission was approved before it was flown. In all, there were over 3,800 of these secret talks, each approved by the National Security Council. The man in charge of the council was and is Henry Kissinger, who is now before the Senate for confirmation as Secretary of State. Kissinger's confirmation is being delayed not so much by secret bombing, but secret wiretapping. The Foreign Relations Committee wants all the details on the wiretapping of some reporters and some of Kissinger's own staff men. But in a closed session of the committee today, the Attorney General, Elliot Richardson, produced only a summary, not the details. Richard Valeriani has more on this story.
At a closed committee meeting, Attorney General Richardson refused to provide the summary of past FBI wiretaps on some of Kissinger's aides that the committee wants. Richardson argued the FBI does not make that kind of information available. Instead, he gave the committee a skimpy memo which only referred to Kissinger's role in the wiretapping. Later, in open session, the committee pressed Kissinger on wiretapping and he reiterated his views.
I have asked the Attorney General to submit to this committee his opinion as to the legal view of the government with respect to wiretapping and national security cases. And he has promised to do this. And I will, of course, strictly abide by his view of the legal situation. But beyond this, the issue of wiretapping raises the balance between human liberty and the requirements of national security. And I would say that the weight should be on the side of human liberty, and that if human liberty is infringed, the demonstration on the national security side must be overwhelming.
In another closed session, the committee voted unanimously to ask the Attorney General if two of its members could see the FBI summary and then report back to the full committee. The dispute over wiretap information has nothing to do with foreign policy and very little to do with Kissinger's nomination. But the committee, which feels it's been pushed around by the Nixon administration, is now pushing back, and it's holding Kissinger as a hostage to get what it wants. Richard Valeriani, NBC News at the Capitol.
The taps which are giving Kissinger problems are taps on the telephones of government officials and Washington correspondents. The Justice Department says they were requested by the late J. Edgar Hoover, and the orders for them were signed by John Mitchell, then Attorney General. But Clarence Kelly, the new boss of the FBI, who talked privately today with our reporter Carl Stern, says he won't allow that kind of wiretapping of officials and reporters. Here's Stern with more on that.
The new FBI director, Clarence Kelly, seems determined to keep the Bureau out of the type of wiretapping that is now at issue in the Kissinger nomination. Kelly said there would be no fishing expeditions while he is director, no capricious use of the so-called national security taps. He said such electronic eavesdropping on the conversations of Americans is justified only when one of them is gathering intelligence for a foreign government. In short, he said not the situation where something is leaked to a newspaper, where somebody is saying something he shouldn't. He said officials and reporters have rights as individuals. He said the FBI will ensure those rights. And he said he is going to want his orders for national security wiretaps from the president and the attorney general in writing. Carl Stern, NBC News, Washington.
In the matter of the president's secret White House tape recordings, there were legal briefs filed today with the Court of Appeals in Washington. The president's lawyers argued that to let Judge John Sirica listen to those tapes in private would open the way to government by judiciary. Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox argued that the judge shouldn't have asked for the tapes, but instead ordered them given to him. While all this was going on, the Republican National Committee assembled in Washington for its first formal review of the political effects of Watergate. Paul Duke reports.
This is the first major meeting of Republican leaders since Watergate exploded into a national scandal. It's acknowledged the party has been seriously damaged with political contributions drying up. But the remarks of many Republicans suggest the gloom is giving way to hope, with the party now on the comeback road.
The Republican mandate of the fall of 72, the Nixon mandate, if you will, is still valid in the fall of 73, and it's going to be valid in the fall of 74. People want a strong defense. They want us to hold the line on taxes. They're upset at food prices and inflation. And while I'm at it, the people want to get this Watergate mess behind us, in the courts, justice to prevail, but they don't like piling on. And they don't like showbiz proceedings. And most fundamentally, And most fundamentally, they want this government and the president free to move forward to solve our problems at home and free to continue to work for a generation of peace.
Do we feel now that we're winning elections, congressional elections, local elections, and that the bad things that we expected, you know, to really be harmed out of this thing are not happening?
I really do not think the issue in 1974 will be Watergate. I think it will be the economy. But we're an old party, and we've suffered many things before, and we will survive this.
Republican leaders believe the worst of Watergate is over. The big worry now is the pocketbook issue of inflation. Unless that's licked, all the brave talk about a comeback will evaporate in a tide of crushing defeats at the polls in 1974. Paul Duke, NBC News, Washington.
G. Gordon Liddy, who has been sentenced to up to 20 years in prison for his role in the Watergate burglary, today was cited by the House of Representatives for contempt of Congress. Liddy is one of the few Watergate figures who hasn't talked. Not long ago, as a witness before a congressional committee, he refused even to be sworn in, and now he faces prosecution for that.
Mm. We're tasting one of these juices. You can't have any, because we're here, and you're there. Looks like it. Tastes like it. I think it's avocado.
Well, how I think I like the spare.
Better than what?
I forgot.
This is living on the label.
This, believe it or not, is Smith Corona's new typewriter ribbon. It's encased in a single cartridge, so you can snap it in our new typewriter in seconds. For professional-looking results, there's a special film cartridge. And for mistakes, there's a correction ribbon cartridge. Smith Corona's new cartridge ribbon typewriters, an electric portable and office models. See them now.
The freeze on beef prices was lifted today. Reports from supermarkets around the country show that the prices stayed the same. How long that will last, nobody knows. One meat dealer said it's all up to the housewife. No substantial changes, up or down, are expected for at least a week. Here are reports from Rebecca Bell and Fred Briggs on the situation at the stockyards and in the packing houses.
The number of cattle coming to market at major Midwest stockyards today was slightly below average. Prices were uneven. At some markets, they were slightly higher, at some slightly lower. This reflects the indecision by cattlemen who really don't know what to expect now that the freeze is off. No clear trend is expected before the end of this week. Cattlemen themselves can't seem to agree on what's likely to happen.
I'm not anticipating any higher prices than we have at this time. I think actually we probably peaked our cattle prices.
Well, at the immediate time, I don't see any great increase. It'll be the day-to-day fluctuation, depending on the runs. But in 2 to 3 weeks, when these heavier cattle that have been held back are worked off, then I see it for a price raise.
Well, I really don't think anything much is going to happen. I think it already has. We've had a sharp rise and then a 16% decline in live price since the freeze went into effect, so I think we've already had the effect.
Some farmers are selling now after missing out on what many think was the peak market. Others are hoping for higher prices this winter.
Cattlemen say the supply is ample. What prices will do in the market will depend on consumer buying. Rebecca Bell, NBC News at Joliet Stockyards.
The packing plants are a little worried about consumer buying, too. This one in Des Moines was one of six Swift & Company plants that closed 6 weeks ago, as did almost 100 other plants. 300 men were laid off here when that happened. Most were glad to be back when the plant opened again early this morning. The beef started coming in just as early. Normally, this plant handles about 7,000 steers a week. Today's deliveries weren't quite up to that scale because some farmers are still a little uncertain. But the packing plants are glad the pressures of the freeze are gone, and they are willing to take their chances on the pressures of the open market.
Now we can operate in a food-free economy. We can buy our cattle and sell our beef under the laws of supply and demand.
For 6 weeks, this cooler has been an empty room. About 7:30 this morning, the first carcass came down the conveyor belt, and in the next few hours, there were hundreds more. tomorrow morning, this room will be completely full. And by Wednesday, some of this meat will be on counters in stores in Chicago. By Friday, in stores in Miami and in New York City. What isn't certain is the price this meat will be bringing. It was originally thought the price would skyrocket once the freeze was removed, but consumer resistance to high pork prices and high chicken prices has given the beef producer second thoughts. It's uncertain just what will happen. Brett Briggs, NBC News, Des Moines, Iowa.
The Cost of Living Council said today it will permit steel companies to raise prices on flat rolled steel by $4.50 a ton, effective the 1st of October. The companies will be allowed a similar increase on the 1st of January. Rolled steel is used in a variety of consumer goods, including household appliances and automobiles. The council also told Ford that it could raise the price of its 1974 models, that's the Ford Motor Company, beyond the $74 increase granted to Ford last week. That's because Ford agreed to make some of its optional equipment standard in 1974. The House Banking Committee and its chairman, Wright Patman, opened hearings in Washington today on the current high interest rates and heard pessimistic reports from representatives of savings and loan organizations. Ray Scherer reports.
Wright Patman has been fighting high interest rates ever since he came to Congress in the days of Herbert Hoover. Today he had some new allies, the savings and loan institutions. They claim they are running out of money for home mortgages because their depositors are switching their savings to banks, which are allowed to pay higher interest rates.
Now, there's no way that our institutions can avoid losing money to commercial banks when ads like this appear in the Chicago Tribune. But there's no way our institutions can do this kind of thing. I understand in the institutions in Chicago, they could have papered the walls in their offices with copies of this ad brought in from their own customers. By the way, speaking of a wild card certificate, I have an example of a real wild card. Here's an ad from a Nebraska bank that's paying its interest in meat. It says here, you can eat your interest. It's this kind of wild card certificate that we have to eliminate.
Well, that may be an extreme case, a bank paying its interest in beef, but as far as the savings and loans are concerned, it makes their point. When the government raised the ceilings on interest rates in July, it helped the commercial banks, but it hurt the savings and loans. What Chairman Patman is trying to do is keep the interest rates and rising still more and heading the country, as he sees it, into a recession. Ray Scherer, NBC News, at the Capitol.
Stock prices dropped sharply today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost more than 7 points. On the New York Exchange, the average price of a share went down 34 cents. On the American Exchange, the average price of a share was off 26 cents.
Most TV makers have two different warranties. If you buy their solid-state color TV, you get their one-year warranty. But if you buy any of their other sets, you get the 90-day warranty. But Admiral has one warranty for one full year. Here it is in writing. It covers every 1974 color set we make. When you pay good money for color TV, no matter how much or how little you pay, you deserve good color TV. So before you buy, look at the package. Admiral gives you the strongest owner protection package in color TV.
If he kissed you once, will he kiss you again? Be certain with Certs, the delicious candy mint that stops bad breath. Candy mint. Breath mint. Certs is two mints in one. Certs with Rensin stops bad breath. With Certs, if he kissed you once, he'll kiss you again. Be certain with Certs. Certs in assorted delicious flavors.
In London today, terrorist bombs exploded in two railroad stations. 13 people were injured, two seriously, and bomb scares forced evacuation of half a dozen other London train terminals. Today's explosions were the worst of a wave of more than 40 bombings in Britain in the past 3 weeks. Police blame them on the Irish Republican Army. Liz Trotta has more details by satellite.
Your attention, please. This is the police message. Euston Station is closed for the time being. Please stay well clear of the entrances.
Hundreds of people were evacuated after bombs went off at two of London's largest railroad stations.
At Houston Station, a bomb exploded in a snack bar located in the terminal's main concourse. Police received a bomb warning just 3 minutes before the blast. 8 people were injured. There was no warning before the bomb went off at King's Cross Station. 5 people were hurt, 1 very badly, when the explosion tore through an old ticket office. Scotland Yard reported that just before the explosion, a young man was seen throwing a parcel into the office. The bombs at both stations went off within 30 minutes of each other. Earlier this year, about 100 people were injured when a bomb placed in a car went off in front of Old Bailey, London's criminal court. Suspected members of the IRA went on trial today for that crime, and so it's widely held here that today's series of bombings is a protest against that trial. In Winchester, 60 miles away from London, where the trial is being held, security precautions were elaborate. There were special police marksmen on buildings near the courthouse. Cars were searched, and even the jury had a special telephone number to ring if anything happened outside the court to alarm them. Police had trained for weeks to make sure that as the IRA suspects arrived, there would be no outside interference, and there wasn't. This is Liz Trotta, NBC News, in London.
In Cambodia, government troops made an amphibious landing behind rebel lines at Kampong Cham. The government said they retook parts of the vital provincial capital. Heavy fighting is still going on there. School strikes, now in their second week, continue to disrupt classes all over the place. Michigan continues as the worst hit state, with walkouts in 33 school districts, including Detroit, affecting 500,000 pupils. An adult education program to improve the lot of migrant farm workers is in trouble, not because of the strike, but because of a lack of money. Kenley Jones reports from Florida.
Constantly on the move, following the harvest from one end of the country to the other, there has been little opportunity for migrant farm workers to break the cycle of poverty and deprivation into which they were born. But now, for some of them at least, the cycle has been broken.
Is there time to eat lunch?
Is there time for lunch?
You wash with soap and water.
You wash with soap and water.
It's called the Migrant Manpower Delivery System, a fancy name, but the purpose is plain enough: to give migrant families the chance to learn how to do something else besides pick crops. For Spanish-speaking migrants, that means learning to speak English, for a start. For some, it means learning a trade, how to be a typist. How to be a welder. For others, it means basic education, how to read and write and figure. This program of free educational and vocational training for migrants has been going on in Florida's Dade County for more than a year now. It is funded primarily by the U.S. Department of Labor and is administered by Florida International University in cooperation with the Dade County Public Schools. More than 1,200 migrants have applied to enter the program since it began, but there has been room for only about 350 of them. Those who have been accepted have been enrolled in school for periods ranging between 16 weeks and 2 years, depending on individual needs and abilities. After graduation, the migrants try to find new jobs in hopes of becoming former migrants. For most of her 20 years, Marta Figueroa followed the migrant stream, even after she was married and had 3 children. Now she's out of the stream. She got a job as a nurse's aide in a Miami hospital. There may not be many more graduates like Marta Figueroa. The money for the program has just about run out. The education classes will have to be shut down by October 12th unless additional funds are granted, either by the Department of Labor directly or through revenue sharing by Dade County. Those who work in this new educational program call it a potential harvest of hope. But unless some money can be found somewhere to keep it going, there is no hope that it will continue. Kenley Jones, NBC News, Homestead, Florida.
In Algiers, the largest summit meeting of non-aligned countries ever held has come to an end. 76 countries attended, most of them moderate in their policies. But more militant countries dominated the conference, and at the end, the conference condemned Israel, but not Arab terrorism, praised the Viet Cong in Vietnam, endorsed Prince Norodom Sihanouk of Cambodia, supported the nationalization of oil and other natural resources, and condemned the imperialist exploitation of poor countries by rich ones.
You ate so fast. Are you sure you've had enough?
I'm sure.
Well, I'll only have to throw it out.
Throw it out.
I'll wrap it up and you can take it home.
Oh, I need some Alka-Seltzer.
When you have heartburn and headache, Alka-Seltzer relieves your headache and neutralizes all the acid your stomach has churned out.
I feel much better.
Good.
Princess Anne of England was thrown from her horse during the European Riding Championships in the Soviet Union, and at first it was feared that she had a broken collarbone. But X-rays taken today showed no broken bones, just some bruises. Princess Anne was defending the title she had won 2 years ago. It was rough going for her and for a number of other contestants, as shown in this report from the BBC.
The state of the cross-country course has been the subject of British protests all week. There have been particular fears about the formidable jump number two. Riders and horses were already tired. They'd covered 12 and a half miles so far. Number 21 in the starting order was Princess Anne. She'd got the fastest time in the steeplechase section and seemed to be going well, but it looked as though Goodwill took off a shade too early. The protests about the hard going were obviously justified by events. The princess was winded, and she damaged her collarbone. Russians I've talked to here wonder why so many of our young women are so keen on this kind of event. However, the princess seemed to have got away with remarkably few aches and pains. Her husband-to-be, Mark Phillips, and her father saw the fall and were there to comfort her. I'm told the princess wanted to carry on, but they persuaded her to withdraw from the competition, which meant elimination. Apparently, they wanted to spare the horse.
Spare the horse. If that comment seems strange, you have to remember that the British take equestrian competition quite seriously. They are just as concerned about the thoroughbred as they are about the rider, even if the rider happens to be a princess. Good night for NBC News.